Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Mambo Italiano, hey, hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano, go, go, go. You mixed up a Siciliano, all you Calabrese do the Mambo like a crazy with a hey, Mambo. Don't wanna tarantella, hey, hey, Mambo. No more mozzarella, hey, Mambo.
Yay! Here we are, here at Heritage Radio.
My favorite time of the week.
Matt and Rachel show.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Matt, Matt Timms.
So I could figure that out already. And that music is because it's Columbus Day. How many of you didn't have to work? I can see everyone here at Roberta's did not have to work, but they probably didn't anyway since this is Williamsburg.
We're kind of flying by the seat of our pants this episode, and we have Rachel's parents in the studio. We're going to get into
that. Linda and Lane, say hello, Mom and Dad.
Hello.
And apparently, if my parents call, then they may be on air as well in the greatest show, game show of all time.
And we also have our Ed McMahon, Purvesh Shalwani.
I love that I'm the Ed McMahon.
Yes. So this is the part of the show where we talk about what's happening. And I was going to start talking about Columbus Day and like what that actually means and the fact that Columbus first found the Bahamas and that he may or may not have been actually from Italy, yada, yada, yada. But I kind of want to talk about Ruth Bourdain.
Is there much more left to say on that?
So Purvesh walked in and he told us to check my email. So I don't know what's been going. What's happened in the past 2 hours?
Well, tell last us. 2 hours. Yes. Hopefully, it's died down by now.
What's happened?
You know, now there's a new Twitter feed, Bourdain Sietsima, I think it's called now.
It's Robert's definitely doing this one.
No, who knows who's doing this one? It was just created this morning.
Really?
What happened? What happened? You're leaving me in suspense.
Wait, what's the name of the original joke? The joke mashup. Ruth Bourdain. You've never followed this Twitter feed?
Not at all.
So it's a mashup of Tony Bourdain and Ruth Reichel, and nobody knew who was actually doing it. They would make fun of both of their tweeting styles.
Okay.
And they even won a beard award this year, or were nominated for one. Huh. And everyone was hoping that would be the one time that they would come to get the award. And the Beard Foundation was probably hoping that this would be their big PR break of all time, but of course they didn't. Yep.
So wait, what's the news?
Well, the news is that someone thought it was Robert Sietsima.
So the food critic.
Who's the food critic for the Real Voice?
I'm sorry. Right. The food editor over at a newspaper in Minnesota was sitting at this food conference down in South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
I believe in Charleston. Is it in Charleston?
Yes. That's probably why Robert went, because it's an awesome food town.
And Robert was there, and there's probably about 10 or 15 people in the room during one of these small events where Ted Lee and Matt Lee were talking. And there's all these tweets flying back and forth, and this editor over at this Minnesota paper thought that that Robert Sietsima was the one who was Ruth Bourdain, because Ruth Bourdain was tweeting live from the room.
Huh.
And so New York media being New York media, all of a sudden everybody is running with this.
They're running with this.
They were.
Why does this not sound like news? It would be news to me if they exploded.
You mean if a person exploded?
Yeah, because I don't. They're tweeting about each other, and we're letting them known about this.
Right.
Hey, Matt Timms.
Yeah.
If Ruth Bourdain tweeted about the chili takedown, you would be very into it.
Oh God,
she should.
I wish I had new people's names. I'm sure she's really famous.
Why don't you tweet that you're talking about her right now?
Well, I guess I'll have to, because I'm gonna get a lot of crap for not knowing who this is. I'm sure she's famous. She's got a famous, pretty last name.
She's actually not really a real person.
Well, the important thing. Oh,
or
okay.
He. Nobody right. knows. Though Robert, in his denial of not being Ruth Bourdain, said in an email to the Village Voice on Friday, "I know I'm not Ruth Bourdain because I'm the one. I'm looking at him." Right now.
See? The plot thickens. He could be looking in a mirror. See, if our producer Jack in the Box was here right now, there would have been some sound effects after I said that.
Well, this is all really fascinating. But I forgive you. You want to know why?
Why?
Because I was stuck on a rent-a-car riding from Massachusetts to New York to the studio right now. I dropped it off at Hertz, and I ran over here. And I paid way too much money to move from one part of Bushwick to another part for $12.
You moved?
I overpaid. What now?
You
no.
move?
No. I live a couple blocks
away
from
Roberta's. Okay, I must be like a dorky foodie insider because I'm not ready to.
You're not done with this yet?
I want to know what's happened. No, it's a mashup of Robert and whom?
Oh, so the and all of the fallout of this, what we get is another Twitter handle.
So someone's now going to make fun of Robert?
Somebody has now decided to create a Twitter handle called Ruth Sietsima.
Really?
It's a meta mashup of Ruth and the puppet master Sietsima.
But nobody... So how... And then so also, to just show you how important it was, this was blogged about by the Wall Street Journal food editor. That right? Right?
No, Wall Street Journal food editor?
No, excuse me, Washington Post. Sorry.
The Washington Post food editor who was sitting in the room said that everybody jumped to conclusions. But actually, if you look at the way these things are going back and forth, and of course he credited himself, and we love Joe Yonan, but he credited himself and said, if you look at the tweets that were going back and forth in that room, Ruth Bourdain could have taken the tweets that were out there and retweeted using a lot of the tweets that are out there and creating her own little messages.
But
because it happened, you know, several seconds after these tweets from the room went out.
Did anyone look to see what Robert had actually tweeted during this period?
Robert tweeted nothing.
He tweeted, oh man, this is so exciting.
Yes.
What?
I'm going to take your word for it.
You're going to change the conversation.
No. Keep talking about these Twitter handles.
It's pretty fun. Yeah, Twitter handles. If you don't have them, you burned your hands.
I screwed up. What? I don't have any news for you guys.
But you just listened to the radio the whole way in the car, didn't you?
No,
you listened
I
to
chatted
Spotify.
With my sister. We chatted the whole way down and back. We entertained each other.
Wait, I have a question for you. Since this is the parents episode.
Yeah.
So are your parents good cooks? Do they both
cook? My parents are brilliant cooks. My mother's a brilliant cook, especially. My dad doesn't know the first thing about cooking. And he was a huge smoker, and so his taste buds are defunct. So he'll eat anything. And he doesn't even drink real coffee. He drinks some instant coffee.
No way, really?
Yeah. Which is a beverage. I actually enjoy instant coffee because, and I consider it a beverage, not
coffee. Right.
But
so you think of it as some
delicious.
fourth thing.
Exactly. It's a different drink.
What kind
but,
of, is it Maxwell House?
Any kind of instant coffee. It's all just chemicals. They're all powdered down and somehow treated with...
The crystals kind of shine in the light.
Yeah, I know. There's something
nice.
In there.
I like...
Kind powdered. Of the same way dip has... They supposedly put shards of fiberglass in it to cut into your mouth.
What?
In order to get you to bleed so that the tobacco will then run through your system a lot faster. That's why you got a dip. Because it's a lot juicier. If you're into tobacco...
I'm embarrassed to admit that I actually thought you were talking about sour cream and onion.
Oh no!
I believed it. I was like, "That's why it's so addictive."
You're
now
from the South.
Now
I understand. Thought from, you were dipping by the time you were five.
No. But they did give
Rachel,
away free
you used
cigarettes.
To dip?
No, they did give away. Have we ever known anyone who dipped, Mom and Dad? Do you ever know anyone? No, but we had lots. I do remember. I mean, most of your friends don't. We had one smoker friend, and I remember she would come over, and then you'd have to open up the windows. Suzanne.
Yes,
I remember that distinctly.
I'm really jealous right now. Rachel's parents are in the studio even as we speak.
But
and this is a real treat
yours.
For the listeners. I'm so jealous
all
that I didn't get
them?
My parents to call in. And they're going to be answering trivia questions in a little while with you guys. And we'll see who has the smartest parents. No, we won't. It's
well,
not
my,
about
my
that.
Parents are geared to parents.
Is this like a Massachusetts against
and
North
you're
Carolina?
In on
Can
this
you get your
too?
Mom to call in from Pakistan?
My mom's not in Pakistan.
Oh,
my mom's
in Chicago.
Oh,
yeah. That'd be cool, too.
She's back.
What is he saying?
I don't know. But I think we're getting noises from the booth.
Well, I would like to tell him to turn the air conditioner on in here. Because it's 82.
Hey, you can pipe in.
Indian summer on Columbus Day.
For the record,
we've got a friend in the booth.
Ooh. We have an email?
We have a friend in the booth?
Yeah. He'd like to tell us something. Let's hear it.
Is it not on?
Yeah, well, it's on now.
Oh, your parents are ready.
They're ready to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then, we're going to do some trivia after this break, so if they can be poised for that, I would love it. Do you guys want to go to break pretty soon?
Yes, because yes.
I see the
you
music coming
song.
On. Hey, Robert,
it's
if you're out there, call us.
We'll be right back.
Hello, and we're back. Not only are we back, but my parents are now officially on the line. Is that right? Mom and Dad?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed it is.
Oh, hello.
But you call that music? That didn't like sound like Chopin to me.
No, we went to see Chopin, and I didn't get much out of it. But that was some pretty brutal metal, so thanks for being patient. Dad, are you on the line as well?
Listen, I heard what you said about my cooking ability, my knowledge of cooking.
You didn't like that?
I totally set you up for that one, Matt. And you just...
I didn't know you were listening. We tried to get the guy in the booth to shut you guys off.
I should actually
say
that both of my parents are awesome cooks. Awesome. Both of them. So my mom has taught cooking classes for several years. They've been in a cooking club for a couple of decades at this point, and my dad has won a couple of cooking competitions.
I can say they're excellent
cooks.
What she
means is that we cook possum.
We do cook possum, but only if we find it on the street.
Dad, you're going to love this. Rachel's from North Carolina.
And her parents are visiting from North Carolina.
We should have been fed a few answers in advance, because I think we're at a distinct disadvantage.
Does she know J.B. Mooney?
Do you know who J.B. Mooney is?
J.B.
Who's J.B. Mooney, Dad?
He's a bull rider.
Oh, he's a bull rider.
In North Carolina?
From North Carolina. It's pretty celebrated from the western part of North Carolina.
You have to be really into bull riding to know that, and my parents are incredibly into bull riding.
Really?
That's an actual thing.
He has to be. He's one of the best.
Well, my parents have a house in northish Sparta,
really?
Allegheny County.
But I've never seen or heard of anyone riding bulls there.
Is it a big thing, Dad? There's bulls in North Carolina.
Well, he has a ranch, a cattle ranch, and JB is the only person from North Carolina, I believe, in
who's
the circuit.
Who's big in the circuit? Is there a lot?
He's one of the best riders.
Well, we're supposed to be talking about cooking.
This is food related.
It's food related because it's
bull
related.
What happens when you don't eat them?
You know, bulls create cows.
I'm curious, where is most of the cattle in North Carolina raised? What part of the state? All over?
I would have assumed that it was kind of central and west.
That's right. Mostly west, I think.
I've actually, because that's one farm that I've never visited in North Carolina, is where they raise beef. Although at North Carolina State University, where I went, they had a training farm for the veterinarians, and the cows had windows in their bellies. I don't even know why or how.
Well, they observed the rumination.
What
really?
Do you mean they had windows?
They have a port that's about 8 inches across into the belly, and the scientists can just watch. They truly observe what's happening in the belly of the cow.
How big is the window? Oh, you said?
About 8 inches. It's 8 inches in diameter.
I remember there was a man, I don't remember it, but I remember being told that there was a man in Canada a long time ago who had, I think he'd had a wound that was kept open, and they had learned a great deal. Are we getting a bit revolting here?
No,
it's really
stuff.
Fascinating.
Keep talking. they kept it behind Plexi?
Well, Matthew's younger brother lives in North Carolina.
He does.
And,
he's hardcore Marine Corps.
Once I left the road, the highway, I had to get some gas, and the gas station was very much Western, had saddles and all sorts of things that they were selling. And I realized that then I was really in farm cattle country.
This was near Wilmington or Fayetteville?
Hmm?
It was near Fayetteville?
Well, he's down in his, lives in...
he lives in Wilmington.
Wilmington, yeah. And it was when you left the 95, and just as you left 95 to go down to Wilmington.
But when it comes to cooking, you really ought to be talking to him.
Oh, Matt's
brother.
He's
one of the great cooks of the family. He's really into barbecue.
Yeah,
very good at
he
it.
Is really into barbecue.
He does it himself?
Yeah. No, wait a minute. What's the deal with North Carolina barbecue versus South Carolina barbecue?
Is it more Eastern versus Western that's the...
No, it's... Well, South Carolina, I think they start to add mustard. Mom and Dad, do you want to weigh in here?
Well, there's at least three different kinds of North Carolina barbecue.
Yes.
There's Eastern, Piedmont, and Western.
And it's basically how much ketchup they add to the vinegar and peppers.
It's all about... I thought the premise was North Carolina's got the vinegar.
That's the base for most of them.
And North Carolina got vinegar. South
I think
Carolina,
the farther west you go, they do start to add a little mustard.
mustard and sugar.
And sugar.
All right, we're learning as we go. I think this should be the part of the show where we begin the trivia.
Yes.
Can I throw trivia questions around?
You going to start?
No, I think you should start.
Me. Okay, I'm going to start. Everybody, mom and dad, you ready for this trivia? Because this is totally geared to you guys, my three questions.
Are you guys poised on the phone? Mom and dad?
All right, this first question is because of...
I think we need a handicap of some sort.
No, this first question is open to everyone.
You've got cooks over there, and we are... My children learned to cook defensively because they had to put up with my cooking.
Well, this is so untrue. She loves being like this.
Well, actually, that makes sense because she's brilliant. You now run cooking competitions for a living.
Right.
Defensively.
They've come in second in one takedown.
Really? Yeah, well, which one?
Mom did. Chili takedown.
But that was because Zoe did it.
People's choice.
Is that your sister, Zoe?
Yeah, Zoe and Christopher.
All right.
My brother and sister.
Is everyone ready for question number one?
Yes, please.
Just because of the holiday, what is the Colombian exchange?
Who's guys, supposed to be answering this?
You guys. My mom and dad and you guys.
Well, I'm thinking cocaine, but is it coffee?
I bet you $1 million.
Is it coffee?
It's what, you know, coffee, what, no, coffee.
Exchange?
The Colombian exchange is when Columbus discovered us. Oh. He and all these major foods went from one continent to the other and swapped. So chilies went everywhere, and tomatoes went everywhere, and potatoes went from here to there. So it was these things that were indigenous to these certain continents that once he... found in quotation marks these other continents, there was this big exchange of foodstuffs and ingredients that hadn't ever been on those other continents.
Well, this is why they have that argument about you know, how nothing is actually really local anymore.
Right. Well, true. Because now, it has.
So wait a minute. When you say that, this is a sort of general generic thing. It's not actually Columbus himself. It's just the movement of foods between the new and old worlds. Is that right?
Exactly. And as a result of his discovery of the Bahamas, which is what he really discovered.
Yeah. Mm. But what went the other way? I mean, this is really interesting.
Oh, that's a good question.
We know all about all the sort of nightshades and things coming over to Europe. But what about
cattle?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess so, because they were from Europe.
Horses? Pigs?
Oh, pigs were Spain for sure.
In Florida, oranges came from the Spanish.
Now, what about pigs?
There's so many pigs.
Oh, yeah, that's what my dad said.
Yeah, pigs came from Europe as well.
From Spain. You got to talk closer to the microphone,
that's
Dad.
Who was it? One of the Spanish explorers took pigs with him through the south, didn't he? So he'd have meat.
I think DeSoto did, who went as far west as the Appalachian Mountains.
From what I recall from my master's program in food studies, I think the Spanish they would colonize a place, and they would explore, and they would essentially leave a pig or two there and then come back in a few years so that it would be overrun, which is why pork is so common in the Caribbean and so many Latin cultures.
Wow, that sounds like pigs, doesn't it?
Yes. But it's an interesting question, is what came here? I mean, my first instinct is almost everything, I think Guns, Germs, and Steel has the answers. That book that was so famous a few years ago.
Came out a little while ago. Do you got any other questions for
us,
Rachel?
Number two, this is also in honor of the holiday. And also where my parents ate lunch. My parents went to Patsy's for lunch, which is 56th Street, not to be confused with any of the pizza chains. This is the place where Frank Sinatra spent every single night, and we did a story, a big profile of them in Edible Manhattan, I think last year. So they went there for lunch after going to the museum. So this question is for them, and is for anyone who else knows the answer. What do some Italian Americans call their red sauce?
Gravy.
Yes. Did you? Woo! Anybody hear that?
Gravy?
Yes. Sunday gravy.
Oh, good heavens.
I think Rachel and Matt have stacked the deck against their parents. I think Matt's parents are going to know.
My mom? Oh, no, no. I actually didn't know if you would know that at all, because it's not a... It's in Chicago. Well, you did live in Chicago. It's Chicago. It's where Italian Americans... So there's no one's calling it gravy in North Carolina, that's for sure.
There is now a restaurant in Raleigh called Gravy.
No, is it because of that?
Because of that. Yeah, no. I wouldn't have known otherwise.
That's amazing.
Oh, we came across a white gravy in Texas, either Texas or New Mexico. which apparently was really the specialty de la maison. And, but it was, well, I don't know. I guess we weren't special enough to appreciate it.
So it was essentially flour, water, and some black pepper?
Well, I think they must have forgotten the black pepper. I don't know.
That sounds about... I actually love that gravy.
Yeah, that's what goes on chicken fried steak.
It's so good.
Chicken fried steak.
Yes.
It's good if it's properly cooked, isn't
yes.
it?
If you add a lot of black pepper and you actually make it from scratch, although I have to admit that I kind of even like the stuff from the packet that you can get at the grocery store, but it's pretty good if you add enough black pepper, which is, I guess, North Carolina has changed a lot in 2 decades, but I think salt and black pepper used to be the only thing in anyone's spice drawer for many decades. Maybe some vinegar.
Oh, that's really interesting.
I say we shuttle it on to the next question.
All right. Okay, this one's totally for my parents. What is the difference between Cajun and Creole?
Oh.
And also, what I'm more curious about, what my parents grew up in Cajun country, so I'm curious what you actually, to you, what the difference is.
Creole, I think, has more Spanish influence.
I would have thought Creole was more in the islands.
Golly, I thought they were identical.
No, they really aren't.
One is French.
The truer French is probably the Cajun food, because that area of Louisiana was populated almost exclusively by people from Nova Scotia. Whereas in New Orleans, they had Spanish who were there first, and then the French, and then, you know, black people from the Caribbean. So Creole food is, New Orleans food or Creole food is really an amalgamation of all of those cultures, whereas in our area of Louisiana where the Cajun food is, if you try hard enough, you can really kind of trace it back to French food. And there's not nearly as many Spanish influences or anything else. And you can tell the difference.
When you say Cajun, you mean that it's not as hot? As Creole?
I think it's hotter.
It can be hot, but what it is mostly is that it's just really well spiced, and people talk about the traditional base of Acadian food or Cajun food, which is oil and bell peppers and
celery and onions,
which is cooked for a long time, and then maybe a very slowly cooked flour over low heat, which makes a very dark roux. And then local ingredients, which they found in Louisiana, like tomatoes and okra and other things like that. But
that's the African influence.
That's the African influence. But Cajun food is spicy, but not nearly as hot as the kind of stuff that you get at a Cajun restaurant somewhere outside of Louisiana. Right.
But if you go up to the country, the French Canadian country, very very bland food up there.
It is, and it may be because when the people from Nova Scotia got down to Louisiana and it was hot, they needed to put more spice in the food to mask the fact that it was spoiled.
Oh,
dear. There were a lot of peppers around as well.
We at Heritage Radio have to take a quick break and come right back after the break and continue this discussion and ask a couple more questions and wrap up the show with a little finding out about who made Rachel and Matt. So we will return. Okay, and we're back. We're back on the Matt and Rachel show. We've got Rachel's parents here in the studio. We've got my parents on the air out in Massachusetts calling in. Are you guys still there, Mom and Dad?
Yep.
Oh, thanks for sticking around.
We were very impressed with that bit of music. It seemed really appropriate.
It is appropriate. That's because Rachel really put a lot of time and energy into this show.
That was, I think it was Aaron Neville. I think. I didn't have my headphones on. That's what I suggested.
Buckwheat Zydeco.
Oh, that's who it was. Good. I wanted to hear from home.
Cajun. Cajun material. Are you guys listening at home?
Oh, I think you should do a chili takedown in Lafayette, and we should all go.
Well, we've been discussing doing a triangle takedown
that's
the triangle region of North Carolina. What are the three cities in North Carolina?
Well, there's more than three.
Of the triangle.
Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill.
Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. And between those three, there must be some incredible culinary skills.
Yes.
I mean, am I right?
Yeah. I wonder what you would have people cook, though.
Well, the
cookies,
point, the real reason
chili,
to do it is it's a chance for my dad and I and my brother to get down there to go hunting in North Carolina, and why not throw a takedown while we're there?
I
perfect
think you should do bacon.
Storm. Bacon. A bacon takedown?
What do you think?
We'll see.
What do you think? Chili, cookies, avocados, or bacon?
You know, something else that would be...
My mom says bacon.
Something else that would be interesting is that the sommelier and his assistant from the Windows on the World weren't working on 9/11. And afterwards, they moved to Tarboro, North Carolina, which is a charming city with kind of like an English green in the middle of it, not far, really, from where your brother lives in North Carolina.
Oh, in Wilmington.
And you could do it there.
Well, it's near Wilmington, but they have a restaurant there, and that would be kind of interesting to get their take on food in North Carolina.
Ah, brilliant.
What time is that?
Tarboro, which is maybe 40 miles in from the coast. On 64.
Well, we have to figure out where to go and what to see whenever we go to Wilmington, because we're kind of stuck in Wilmington. Maybe
you should go there.
One of the places we were lost in when we were trying
we to went
find
to Wilmington,
our way
north.
Yeah, mm-hmm, we did.
Probably so. New Bern is a very attractive place, which is close to Jacksonville as well.
New Bern is beautiful. We went to Pervase and I did a road trip to North Carolina and visited my parents, and we also went to New Bern. And Wilmington. I hadn't been to Wilmington and I hadn't been to New Bern in even longer.
Wait, what do we do in New Bern?
We had a bad beer at that bar, remember?
Oh, those terrible oysters.
Yes, because they weren't from North Carolina, these people.
Wilmington's a lovely city.
You know what their big industry was back in the day?
Hmm?
What was their major industry?
Pirates.
No.
It was in the 18th century.
It was turpentine.
Oh, Dad, you were just talking about that last time I was home, weren't you?
Yeah, the naval stores because of all the pine trees.
That's so strange to talk about turpentine twice in one season.
Let me ask some trivia questions. I'm so down with this. I want to do it. I don't know if it's going to spur debate like yours do. For example, broccoli is a member of what family?
I know, but yeah, I'm going to be quiet.
Anybody?
What is the question?
Broccoli
again?
Is a member of what family?
Oh, broccoli.
Oh, it's a cruciform. Cabbage.
It is. Is that the family, though?
Speak up, Mom.
It's a cabbage.
Yes.
Yeah, cruciform.
Right. Excellent.
I think they're both right. But it's a brassicas.
Mustard.
Brassicas.
I would have answered mustard family, but that was just me talking. It's a member of the mustard family.
I think
but
every single one of us is right with a different answer.
Exactly. So that's a well-researched question. Glad I asked.
Now wait a minute. We just got something right up here. Don't we get any?
Yeah. You get applause.
Normally, our producer Jack in the box is on vacation, but he's pretty good at stepping in with applause sounds.
Oh, good.
If I knew how
good
to do it myself.
What vitamin is liver high in? What vitamin is liver
iron
high in?
B.
Yeah, the B family, I would think. No?
Vitamin A. Vitamin A. Sorry? The answer is vitamin A.
Do you know why?
You do.
I don't, but I was curious.
I'm not the intellect here. I leave that to you guys. Ooh, listen to this. Lewis and Clark befriended Sacagawea on their travels. Befriended is it? Employed. And what was her tribe?
Ooh, she was much further west because she had been taken east as a slave from her people. Can't remember what they're called, but.
Was she a Shoshone?
Oh, you got it!
That's amazing.
Ah.
But what did they eat?
Rachel's father just got it. Did you guys hear the answer?
What did they eat?
It was Shoshone.
I bet they ate some kind of...
Yeah.
I bet they ate some kind of meat dried beyond any kind of...
Bison.
Yes, just like so dry, pounded with some kind of pepper, something terrible. Called like pemmican.
We were talking about chili and dried chilies and trying to figure out the history of dried chilies and whether or not cowboys actually ate it. And wow, they would have eaten it. And would they have used dried beans? And why wouldn't they have used dried beans? And would they have used dried meat?
Well, remember that was the first show we were talking about the history of chili.
Right.
And I read somewhere that the original chili was beanless, and it was people on the trail, and it was literally like beef jerky that was pounded into a paste, and it was reconstituted.
Right.
Right.
Well, why wouldn't beans have traveled well? Dried beans.
I guess you have to... Well, I don't know.
They don't rot, do they?
They what now?
By the time they're dried. They're not going to. Well, they'd
yeah, they'd be pretty
weeded.
Super on the trail.
But they take a long time to cook.
That's my thinking. Is you'd have to soak them or cook them for a long time.
It takes about it takes about 2 hours to soak dried beans. I guess cowboys don't have 2 hours.
Right. They could soak them in saddlebags.
Well, it's really interesting. And that's the reason that they didn't have beans. It seems so logical that they would take a bag of beans and a buckboard.
What's a buckboard?
The wagon.
The
chuck wagon.
Made in Conestoga.
But you're saying that it was because they had to soak them.
That's a guess. That's my guess.
Well, they don't have to soak them. You can just throw them in water and start cooking them, but it still take a long time.
Uh-huh.
But the cook would have a certain amount of time while everyone was sort of wandering around finding doggies and things.
I know. I thought that was his job.
What I think was, if they were traveling west, they were trying not to stay as little at little time at as small amount of time as possible at a place.
I mean, cowboys were just herding. They'd be gone for
don't you think, I mean, you can't herd at night, and presumably it was at night that you'd be sitting around eating your beans.
Well, I'm not even sure these were people who were herding. They were people who were heading west. They were heading west into the rest of the country to what is that called?
Well, no,
the
cattle drivers were driving to the market. But you remember the movie Blazing Saddles?
Mm-hmm.
They clearly had beans in that.
Oh, yes.
I definitely did. Blazing Saddles too.
Oh my gosh, I wish we had that sound queued up right now. Yes, thank you, Matt.
No problem. All these other questions are so ridiculous. Not going to want to. What drink was famously used by the NASA Gemini space program?
Oh, that's so easy.
I know.
It's easy. I don't know the answer.
Oh, excellent.
Tang.
Dad, you knew that one. Tang.
Tang.
Didn't you guys grow up with Tang?
You mean that powdered orange?
Powdered orange juice. Yeah.
I like the way that tastes.
It's from
delicious.
Childhood.
It has a weird crystalline kind of addictive thing.
I remember that.
Do they still make it?
Tang, they absolutely do still make it.
You're making me feel very foreign here.
Oh, listen to this. Here's a question. Invented by a French scientist, how is Plumpy Nut, a peanut-based food similar to peanut butter, but with 500 calories per serving, used? Plumpy Nut.
What? Can you read that? Can you repeat the question?
Yes. Invented by a French scientist, the stuff is called Plumpy Nut.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than peanut butter because it supplies about 500 calories per serving.
Yes, because people in the modern world need more calories per serving.
So how would you potentially use a product invented by French scientists? Why would you need such a substance in your life?
Well, if you're in a third world country.
Exactly. I think it's used in
I think they probably stuff it down geese.
Oh, to make foie gras. That's genius.
You were so close and then you lost it.
Tastes really good.
Now,
is
you're
that
right.
True?
Famine relief. Okay. It's called Plumpy Nut and yeah, all the aid relief workers are giving it to starving kids. 500 calories per serving.
What do you mean it's invented?
Well, I mean, I suppose they just figured out a way to pack as many pack as much peanut into one serving as possible, and it becomes they take all the
fat.
Yeah, it's high in fat.
It's a sort of cookie, a sort of.
It's a spread like peanut butter. It comes in a tube.
That is not a. Would that be a more humane way to make foie gras? It's not a bad idea.
Plumpy Nut?
Yeah.
I love that we've gone from Tang to Plumpy Nut.
You're right.
I've got a feeling you're being politically incorrect here. You're not allowed to think about geese being plumped up anymore.
Oh, I know. That's the horrible part about being on a food radio show.
But Plumpy Nut could solve the problem.
No.
Oh,
it's still inhumane.
Well, they just get fat because they're eating really high-fat foods instead of being force-fed.
Yeah, they're not wringing their neck and stuffing it down them.
They aren't really wringing their necks.
Oh, they used to. God.
Well, they used to sort of grind something into their beak.
I think they've just put some, like a they open their mouths with plastic and they
tube, yeah.
Although they will be the first to tell you that the geese really seem to enjoy it.
You know, I never thought that the geese looked particularly sad in the photographs that I saw. I must say.
Oh right, in the photographs that they showed you in France.
I mean, they were yes, exactly, but they were particularly they were sad when it came to the sort of denouement. But at the time of being fed, I think they were probably.
It probably depends on
their geese. You're getting pretty anthropomorphic.
Oh, okay. Can't do that.
We've actually done a fairly decent job of being... We've been very animal-centric today.
Oh, I know. In Greek mythology, the Argonauts accompanied Jason in his quest to find what? Ah.
These aren't food-related.
It's not food-related.
The golden fleece.
I know. This is what happens when you've been sitting in a car for 6 hours, and I had to race home, and I didn't get to prepare any questions, and this is what I had.
Are you calling yourself
Brooks
Slater?
Brothers is the answer.
Wait, so is the golden fleece just valuable because it was golden? Could you shave off its golden fleece, and then it would grow back more?
What I'd heard as a rationale was that they obviously killed the sheep and had the mutton, so they did eat something. So, but that they then put the fleece in the rivers, and that caught the gold as it washed down from its original source.
There was that much gold
somewhere on the Black Sea.
Really? That's amazing.
There was ever that much gold in the Black Sea.
Well, no, in the rivers, it was washing down into the Black Sea.
In the rivers. In Korea, they use corduroy for the same thing, and they're really trying to get tiny gold flakes.
But a decent fleece would be much better than a bit of corduroy.
They just dredge the river with corduroy?
Or chenille.
No, you sort of lay it in it.
Water runs over it.
That's
you lay
interesting.
It in it, and then it's the gold sort of sticks.
Oh, that's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
But a fleece would be better any day.
The golden fleece. You could just get in there wearing a full fleece outfit.
And that's what made it gold. Yeah, exactly. Mm.
I'm out of questions.
Isn't that also where sturgeon live? And that's where caviar is from, too, that part, those seas? Those are pretty valuable.
They're in the Caspian more, a little bit east, aren't they?
Yes,
Caspian. I mean, the really super-duper pooper.
The caviar.
Yeah.
To bring this back full circle, they actually now are producing American caviar in North Carolina. I don't think they're allowed to call it caviar,
really?
But it is American.
Good stuff?
It is good. It actually is really good.
You just can't call it caviar. With what? Just any sort of whitefish?
No, it's sturgeon.
Oh.
Have you had it?
A caviar takedown.
They do it.
Yes.
Ooh, that sounds like a better class of takedown.
So you can't call it caviar because caviar can only come from that region.
I thought they call it American caviar.
I don't think they're supposed to do that either, though. But it's really good. It's a really
delicious.
North Carolina
caviar. Is it from sturgeon?
Yes, it is from sturgeon. Someone told me that there used to be sturgeon in the Hudson River, and they've since gone.
True.
Yeah,
that's quite true.
And even more importantly, oysters.
Yes,
and they're all fished out.
Yes, or dredging and traffic, boat traffic, and all those kayakers.
There's a movie out there that a friend of ours, Emily Driscoll, has done called Shell Shocked, which is about to blow the lid off the whole story of oysters in the Hudson.
What? How they should come back?
Oh, they're trying so hard to get them to come back.
The largest consumer and producer of oysters in the world.
But I think the point of the film, or at least one of the points, was that the oysters really filtered the water, wasn't it?
Yes,
yeah,
they
absolutely do.
So oysters are mainly farmed now, which is one of the few. For fish farming, it's rare that it's a win-win, but oyster farming is a benefit to wherever they're farmed because they filter the water, and they're just they kind of are. Hung in, they can be farmed in a couple of different ways, but a lot of times they're just hung in these kind of net plastic bags or on strings, and then I think some of the farmers actually pull them in and scrape and scrub them down so the oysters are cleaner. One of my very first stories ever as a food writer was about oyster farming back in like 1994.
Well, scientists are trying to bring the oysters back in New York,
and I think they're going to do it. It's looking pretty. It's a pretty hopeful little movie about that.
Yeah, that's
hope,
cool.
Hope.
Well, we certainly hope so. It'd be wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, more oysters.
I should probably go into that. It might make more money.
Well, we'd like to wrap it up here at Rachel's, and we're super at Roberta's. Matt and Rachel show just
thank you,
came
Mom
and went.
Dad. Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Nice meeting you.
Okay.
Brilliant. Very nice of you to come on the show. Really super sweet.
We had a lovely time.
We had a lovely time. Bon appetit.
All
we
right.
did, too. I was glad to be here.
Now we get to eat.
Well, we're
fun.
We went way.
This is a public service announcement from Sea to Table and Slow Food NYC.
On October 11th, sustainable seafood distributor Sea to Table will join Slow Food New York City to host an event celebrating the bounty of local New York seafood. The event, Slow You, Sustainable Sashimi, will feature a tasting of four fish species from local Montauk waters. The event will take place on Tuesday, October 11th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Institute of Culinary Education, 50 West 23rd Street in Manhattan. Tickets are $25 for Slow Food members, $35 for non-members. Visit slowfoodnyc.org for more information about this event and how to get tickets.
As a part of National Food Day, St. John's Bread and Life, Brooklyn's innovative and life-saving food service program based in Bedford-Stuyvesant, is inviting Brooklyn chefs and purveyors to learn about how the organization is marrying the procurement of old-fashioned, locally grown organic produce with the latest technology to deliver healthy, cost-effective meals to those in need. St. John's Bread and Life, located at 795 Lexington Avenue, will hold an open house on Monday, October 24th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Visit www.foodday.org to sign up for the event.